Well, if you're back to hear some more of our extracts from the hilarious series of live radio programmes broadcast 20 years ago by me, Vernon Pierce, and one of my best friends, but now sadly the late Brian Starman, in the Grumpy Old Men programmes, then you'll not be disappointed. Because here are some more of those observations on life, which strangely don't seem to have changed much with the passage of time. And in this episode, we'll be talking about TV news reporters, potholes, loud music in cars, misuse of the English language, overseas call centres, and British versus continental bars.
Having a bit of a moan, so what are you going to start us off with this week, Brian?
Well, it's an item about TV news reporters. There's been a dramatic change over the last few years that I particularly have noticed, and I wonder if anybody else has. In the past, they would stand there very static with a mic and deliver the item.
Or even sit at a desk.
Even, or even sit. But I'm talking about the guys outside who are actually reporting the information.
Oh, right, okay.
On location. And they just stood there and delivered it. Fine. And now, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a lot of hand and arm waving. They look like 60s puppets. Now, you and I would remember 1950s and 60s
puppets. Yeah, Fireball XL5, Joe 90.
But there's hands going everywhere. And to be honest, it's a heck of a distraction.
It is, yes, you're right.
You miss hearing what the guy is saying, because I don't know why they're gesticulating. Why don't they just keep them by the side?
Well, they probably do that naturally anyway, but instead of cutting in with the camera, doing a close-up, you know, so you only see the guy's head and shoulders. Because I don't know about you, but we all have nervous tics, don't we?
I don't.
Don't you? Oh, right. Well, I'll tell you what.
I used to have, but I had treatment.
No, but seriously, I mean, I remember when I was first making sort of presentations when I got into management and
so on. We've both done that.
Somebody took me to one side and said, look, stop playing with your loose change.
Yes.
You know, I used to fiddle in my pockets with my loose change. And, you know, it is distracting because everybody in the audience is looking to see what you're going to do with your hands next.
I used to put my thumbs in my waistband.
Right.
So the only way I could improve my presentation style was to wear a jacket.
Yeah.
Stopped overnight.
So I think this is an interesting sort of topic, is that these presenters probably do it naturally. I'm sure that they haven't been told to gesticulate to make themselves more animated. Maybe they have. Maybe
they've all got the same nervous tic then, Vernon, because there isn't an exception out there. I think it's part of this Blair thing, because if you noticed, he has particular hand gestures that he follows when he's talking to you. But it just irritates me. And the other thing I don't like, they've got into the habit now of the anchor person in the studio talking with the reporter outside, and they actually use first name terms, and the person in the studio asks them another question. I don't need that. Do you?
No, I suppose it's, again, it's all part of this dumbing down thing, is it making it sort of chatty and friendly, you know, instead of more formal.
But that was only a light whinge, really.
All right, then. Right. Well, my first moan this week is about the state of road surfaces in this country. I think we've got the worst of any European country I've visited. And to be honest, they've deteriorated so much. They're on a par with some of the Greek islands I've visited.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
They're very rough.
They're appalling.
Yep.
I mean, we're just not investing enough in our existing road system, let alone, you know, building any additional roads. And I mean, it's just going to get worse. And patching up is more costly in the long run.
Yeah, because it just degenerates quicker.
That's right.
And the only option is to resurface it. And I also like the new surfaces they're putting down are non-spray.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Which are brilliant because, you know, very light rain. The rain isn't an effect. It's a spray up from the roads.
That's right. I mean, I sort of went to see my my parents yesterday, and I drove down the motorway, and the spray was terrible from the traffic.
The lorries and everything, isn't it?
That's right. But I mean, going back to this question of road surfaces, I mean, it really is short-sightedness on the part of local authorities. And I know they're cash-strapped and they haven't got the money to invest. But if they just keep on, you know, sort of stuffing a little bit more in the holes and so on, it's just going to put it off.
But aren't they between a rock and a hard place? Because I understood recently in the press that they're having to pay out so much in compensation because of the road's condition is causing damage, they're left with no money to do the road surface.
Yeah.
So it's Sort of a chicken and egg. I don't know.
And they have limited budgets, so they have to sort of decide how they're going to spend their money for the year. And they might have one or two big schemes, if you like, to resurface particular roads. But the rest of it, that's it. All they can do is patch it up. But it's somewhere we've got to sort of cut through this vicious circle and really start spending some money.
But they don't. We pay billions a year in road fund licences on lorries and whatever. None, as I understand it, of that is ring-fenced for road maintenance.
Absolutely not. It goes straight into the exchequer.
Isn't that what we're paying it for?
Yeah. I think that's what annoys people. You know, all this discussion about road pricing and charging us even more. If that money was going to be invested in public transport and spent repairing the roads, yeah, I don't think any of us would mind. You know, we'd grumble a bit. But if you could see that money being invested, you would
object less to paying it,
yeah,
wouldn't
that's
you?
Right. But you've got all your petrol tax, you've got your road tax and all the other taxes. And all it's doing is just going straight into Mr. Brown's coffers. And all right, a certain amount is returned each year to local authorities, but nowhere near enough what they need, you know, for just sort of straightforward maintenance.
And if they did it properly, as you hinted before, it would last 20-25 years if it's addressed now.
Yeah, that's right. But also treating the symptoms and not just the cause, not just the symptoms. If a road needs some drainage to stop the, you know, subsoil from being washed away, then do that properly. You know, do it properly, not just sort of do it now and say, oh, well, you know, another couple of years' time we'll have to do it again.
Do it again. Short-sighted.
Absolutely.
Very clever. Unscripted.
My next bleat and moan, if you like, is loud music, especially, and I mean this must wind up everyone of our age, youngsters driving their cars around the streets with the thing absolutely booming away and vibrating. I mean,
it's actually rocking the car, isn't it?
How can they actually sit in there? Their ears must be bleeding with the sort of volume of the music. And how can that possibly sound right, you know, I mean, it must be distorted to hell, you know. And I mean, it's noise pollution, isn't it?
Because it is of the worst kind, because you can't, you hear the rhythm and the boom, but you don't actually hear the music.
No, that's right. If they were playing something that I couldn't sing along to or whatever, I wouldn't sort of criticise them quite so much. But all it is just this horrible rhythm. And I mean, is it safe? That's my question. I mean, you can't hear the sound of the engine for a start. And I mean, it's fairly critical, you know, when you and I know that you can tell a lot by the tone of your engine. You can tell which gear you're in. You can tell if it's just about to blow up or whatever.
Can I tell you a little funny story about that? Because I used to have a stereo, not quite that loud. And it was after work and I was leaving Reading Town Centre. And it's a dual carriageway. And all of a sudden, the van in front of me mounted the pavement to my left. I thought, what the heck's the idiot doing? And then I noticed that everybody ahead of him was doing the same. Because of the loudness of my stereo, I hadn't heard the ambulance coming up from behind.
Which is exactly what I was going to say before you interrupted me.
Well, you stole my last item. I'm stealing this one.
How can they hear the emergency vehicles coming up behind them? Or a friendly toot on a horn, you know, saying...
Is there such a thing as a friendly toot?
Please get out of my way.
Well, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Nicely. Beep, beep.
Or you silly boy, why did you do that in front of me? No, but seriously, it does have sort of safety implications, in my opinion, because you weren't made to sort of go along, you know, with your ears being assaulted in that way.
But there is a sort of cult, because in my insurance claims days, there were sometimes cars that were stolen and the stereo system within it was worth more than the car, and they'd have as much as 600 watt stereo output. And without being an expert, that's potentially very loud.
It's more than you have in a disco, I would think.
Oh, it is, yeah. But I agree with you.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Two Grumpy Old Men, presented by my friend Vernon Pierce and Brian Starman. A regular programme of middle-of-the-road music interspersed with moans about the things that annoy us most, and hopefully some amusing observations on life. I want to talk about bad misuse of terms, like icon. It seems very easy nowadays for people like pop stars to be described as an icon. A model on a catwalk is an icon. I'm sorry, but that isn't what the original reason for that word was. It had religious connotations, or somebody who, over a long period of time, had developed an idea or had given themselves to something sort of pure and whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
But to call a pop singer an icon is just naff, and it just grates.
That's right. I mean, it's also used in computer terminology, isn't it? An icon on a screen.
Yeah.
Which has just got nothing at all to do with...
with the, what its origin of the term.
Regional connotation. No.
It's a misuse. And the other ones are courageous and heroes. The number of times you probably don't watch sport, but a footballer trips over and he then gets up again and he's described as a courageous hero for having done so. And
isn't
it's all
that
this
your job, you know.
Oh yeah, it's all this exaggerated terminology that just gets under my skin. That's not courageous.
Well, it's a bastardization of the English language, isn't it, really? I know it's a sort of language is a fluid thing, it's growing, it's changing all the time, but I think it can be abused.
Yes. And it regularly is.
Yeah, especially on, you know, television and in the papers or whatever. And the tabloids particularly are looking all the time, aren't they, for sort of outrageous headlines. You know,
yes, so, to attract the attention.
Yeah, yeah, but, courageous Shearer dives in the box. You know,
Stephen Gerrard, our hero. No way, Jose.
So we get so irate, don't
and
we?
And agitated.
And I'm just about to get agitated again because things that...
Sit, calm down.
Overseas calm call down. Centres, right? Overseas call centres really driving me mad because it's one of the sort of big irritations I find in trying to contact your bank or your insurance company or almost any service provider these days. They've sort of relocated abroad and they expect people to be able to deal with somebody in a different country with a different
culture.
Now, apparently, due to a survey recently, found that only 4% of people had a good experience when dealing with a call centre abroad. Over half of those asked said their biggest gripe was having to contact call centres outside the UK, and more than a third admitted to shouting and swearing at agents because
really?
They got so frustrated.
And which is sad because it's not the person the other end's fault. It's the system, isn't it?
And the issue's now become such a national bugbear that some companies are using their UK-only call centre policy as a marketing tool. They're going back and saying, we only use UK call centres.
And some are coming back from abroad.
Yeah. NatWest's latest advertising campaign, for example, guarantees that customers will speak to people in Barnsley or Cardiff rather than Bombay or Calcutta. Yeah. But what really, really did wind me up was I recently spent 30 minutes trying to get an insurance quote for my old dad. And I was shuttled around between various desks in Bombay. And most of the time was just spent trying to make myself understood. They didn't.
So this is purely a language...
I think so, a culture difference, because they didn't understand the terminology that I was using and my reasons for wanting to get my dad a better quote than the one he'd been given by a broker.
Right.
And the term, you know, we'd been dealing with Norwich Union through this broker, but I wanted to talk...
Oh, my employers, they pay my pension.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to Norwich Union direct.
Right.
And I was trying to explain, can I get a quote from Norwich Union direct... It's a better quote than Norwich Union through a broker. And it's just completely lost them. And then I also had further problems because they went away for huge long periods to check up on how long my dad's license was valid for, because obviously he's now in his 80s and, you know, it's going to be reviewed in so many years' time and so on. It was just a nightmare. I don't know why I persevered, to be honest.
30 minutes and shows incredible patience.
It does. But what really bothered me was that if that had been my dad, who's already beginning to feel a little bit confused,
yes.
You know what I mean?
It would just compound it, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And I don't think these firms are doing themselves any, you know, any use at all.
It ruins their image in
That's
a way,
right.
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because used to work for the Norwich Union, ironically, and when they were proposing to introduce these overseas call centres, they actually said training is given to these people in India. And we said, well, what training? Well, they said, obviously technical. But we also bring them up to date with the latest plot in EastEnders. And I thought, that's okay, that's a cultural thing, but when you're on the phone for an insurance quote, would you really get down to discussing last night's EastEnders? And the plot was lost, but I say a lot of the companies now are bringing them back. They're recognising, although it was inexpensive, it's not working.
Yeah, I mean, even within our own country, you know, if you're talking to somebody in Glasgow or in Newcastle, we have communication problems here. We're not talking, this is not a racial issue.
It's a language issue.
It's a language issue. It's about making the person on the other end understand what it is you want.
Yeah, on a technical thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, well.
I've just seen a note of your next topic. Are you inviting me out for lunch or for a drink? Are you, well, Vernon? It's so unusual, so unlike you.
I will do one day, I promise you. But I do get wound up a little bit. The more I travel abroad, the difference between continental bars and the traditional British pub.
I know where you're going.
Because in a British pub, you've got to fight your way to the bar to buy a drink and, you know, pay for it each time. Whereas when you're on the continent, it's much more civilised, isn't it? You sit at a table with your wife, girlfriend, whatever,
waiter comes
friends.
Over.
That's right.
Or waitress.
And that's right. So you don't have to sort of leave somebody for 5-10 minutes while you queue up at the bar for the next drink.
And you don't get wet elbows.
Yeah,
do you
exactly.
notice the
that's
bit
right,
of the bar that I always go to order drink is soaking wet?
And if you can find a table, it's full of empty glasses.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, on the continent, you sit down, they clean the table, and you pay when you leave. You know, why do you have to keep forking out, you know, putting your hand in your pocket and getting change all the time and getting money back when you know you're going to be there all evening and perhaps have 3 or 4 rounds or whatever?
And you also get offers of refills.
That's
don't
right.
you?
Yeah.
On the continent, you come over and say, would you like another one?
That's
and
right.
the timing is always impeccable.
Yeah.
Drink almost finished.
Or even if you don't. I mean, you've only got to catch the waiter's eye as he comes around.
Yeah.
But it means your evening out doesn't get interrupted. And you can sit there, you can be having a conversation. The waiter says, can I get you the same again? Yep, thank you very much. And, you know, away you go. Whereas if I took you out today, I wouldn't want to buy you more than one drink. No, because I've got to say, do you want another one? Oh, okay. And I have to go and leave you and stand at the bar.
Oh, that would be so sad.
Well, no, but we're in the middle of a conversation and we don't want to interrupt it, do we? You know what I mean?
Conversation's two-way, isn't it? I normally seem to do a lot of listening with you, Vernon.
Pardon? No,
but anyway, I know it's a quality of life thing, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
It's being cared for, it's being appreciated as a customer.
Yeah, and I think perhaps we haven't caught up with the fact that there was a time when pubs were for men who went out drinking in the evening, stood around the bar chatting, and you know what I mean? They were always at the bar. Whereas now it's more of a social occasion because with food coming into pubs more now and the banning on smoking and so on, you know, people go out for a social occasion. And if you're with a group, as I say, you don't want to be constantly leaving it to go and buy a drink.
No.